You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 482 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we're coming to you in different locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington. Alas, no longer the home of the first place Seattle Mariners, but still home of the four-time WNBA champion, Seattle Storm.
And still playing, Seattle Storm. I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. Nothing bad happened with them in the last 2 days, so that's good. Or good.
I mean, we recorded on Monday afternoon, and you talked about how good a weekend it was for John Schneider in the Seahawks front office, and then the Raiders game happened.
Yeah.
So, wow. But yes, I don't know that you would have wagered a lot when we recorded on Monday that the Seattle Storm would still be playing as we record this on Wednesday, heading into a...
Almost every team has won, right? Like, these are all game threes.
Not almost every team has won. We are recording this during the third quarter of Lynx Valkyries.
If the Valks can pull it off, it's everybody, right?
It would be the second time in WNBA history. They've not always played with this particular format, but the second time under this format where all four seeds, all four series have gone to game three. So,
do they call them the Valks?
They do call them the Valks.
Okay.
And have people teams... in the know, like me, call them the Valks.
Okay. That's what really matters.
That whole Valkyries game I've attended.
I guess more on that later.
The Valkyries? No, more on the Storm.
No. On the Storm. The WNBA playoffs.
Well, we start with... We toasted to this on the weekend recap pod, which you should listen to if you haven't already. Or don't. I don't know. It's live your life.
Nah, but don't do it.
It's a new toast. Congrats to Cal Raleigh, who matched Ken Griffey Jr.'s team record with his 55th and 56th home runs of the season Tuesday in Kansas City. Mickey Mantle in the dust now. Griffey tied even with Cal Raleigh right now in 60, well within sight.
I was wondering, so wait, did you say he was going to be over? I was trying to remember.
I said over 59.
Over 59 and a half. But then under the AL record, or were you just over 59.5?
I don't think we specifically said that. I would probably say between 59.5 and 62.5 would be my bet.
I mean, it is going to be the most fun. Like, if he's at 60 or 61 in that Dodgers series, I think there's a chance he does it before then. I mean, there's still quite a few games.
Chance.
I mean, 1-2 home run game like this one, obviously, like, it accelerates things very quickly. I mean, I hope it happens just for the excitement of watching every single at bat. The thing that I think is funny to me, where people are like, every story about Cal Raleigh has to be like, Cal Raleigh has 56 home runs and knows the records in sight, and he could care less. And I'm like, you don't have to frame it that way. Like, we understand baseball players want to win games, but it's almost like as if fans are just like, well, if he's trying to break that record, they're not going to try to win games at all. Home runs aren't helpful to winning baseball games.
I did say earlier when Cal Raleigh singled in the, I believe that was in the eighth inning, that it was a disappointing outcome.
Fans also want Cal Raleigh to break this record. Like, we want him to break it as much as Cal, maybe not as much, but like, the other thing is just like, if the Mariners make
I would say maybe more, but yes.
I think Cal Raleigh really wants to, I don't think Cal's like, he's playing every game. He's taking every at bat. He homered off a hitter pitching. Like,
I am sure that Cal wants this record, and he can want this record and want the Mariners to win the AL West
exactly, simultaneously.
There's lots of room. We contain multitudes.
It's just like a hilarious thing, but like, this shit we're going to remember more. Like, if the Mariners, let's say that they go to the ALDS and lose, right? And it's like, if Cal hits 62 home runs, we will remember that shit forever. Like, tell me about the Orioles series in 1997. Ken Cloud started
like game three or game four against a lefty in Baltimore. That was a key moment in the series, I think. There was a game that was opposite my driver's ed class. Pretty memorable stuff.
Yeah. I mean, did we attend game one of that series? It was not game one because they started in Baltimore for game one. It was game three of the series, I'm pretty sure.
I thought they had home field in that.
Or was it
Baltimore was the wild card because they were obviously playing in the same division as the 1997 Yankees. So the odds of the Orioles winning the division.
Okay, so then it was game one and they lost. The Mariners lost that game, right?
I believe so. I want to say Jeff Fassero started though, that but
For
that
the
can't be
Mariners.
right, can
This is what I'm talking about, though. Like,
it? We're not disproving. We're not disproving it. That is for sure.
individual milestones, it's not like an individual milestone is not also a milestone for the fans of that team. It's not like it's like Cal Raleigh solemnly celebrates his 60-second home run. Like, it's everybody, you know? We're all part of this. So.
We are all a part of this. We've hit a lot of these home runs. Now, Randy Johnson did start game one of the series. Jeff Becerra started game three on the road. So
Did they lose game one?
they did 9-3. Yes. I believe Randy Johnson lost both games. He did.
Wow.
He started in that series, outdueled both times
Overrated.
by
Mike
Mike
Messina.
Mussina.
I remember taking the bus to it. I think we took the day off school and took the bus to it.
The Mariners
I
lost the
remember
first two
that more
games of the
than
series
any
at home.
second of the game. I do not remember a second of the game. I remember getting on the bus and it was one of those ones that had the like bendy thing in the middle, that curve. That's it.
They did win the game three in Baltimore with Richie Amaral leading off and playing first base? Question mark? Was Tommy La Stella unavailable?
That's pretty good.
He went two for three, though. It was a nice game for Richie Amaral.
Anyway, Cal Raleigh could care less about the home runs. All he cares about is winning. A wild card berth for Cal Raleigh is more important than hitting the most home runs in American League history.
Friend of the pod, Percy Allen, did ask me last night if how I felt about all this. And I
About
was
Cal
confused
Raleigh?
about the question at first. And he was like, do
I
you think
fucking
it's
hate
like,
it, dog.
but he, like him pushing Griffey out of the record books? And I'm like, look, Griffey is never going to get pushed out of my heart.
It doesn't
Again,
yet. How do you feel about all this?
there's room for both Cal and Griffey
That's another
in this
hilarious
heart of
question
mine.
where you're like, Griffey sucks now, obviously. His whole legacy is tarnished because a person 20 years later hit more the same amount of home runs as him.
Right. Not yet more home runs.
How do you feel about all this? The fact being the per like Roger Maris still kind of matters. You know what I mean? Like Roger Maris, not kind of, Roger Maris
100%
still
matters.
matters. The person who it would suck for is Aaron Judge.
I suppose so. Who
And
also may
his
not win the
shitty
MVP.
career. Hasn't even
All
won that many World Series, but he doesn't care. Or no.
All he wants is the home runs.
Yeah, not like Cal. Cal just wants the team to win. Anyway, that was just something that it annoys me every time I hear it. I'm just like, we get it.
Should I give you my review of Big Dumper Beer while we're here?
Absolutely, you
I
should.
tried it on Saturday, posted that on the Pelton Cast Instagram. It's very solid. It's not outstanding. I did not try it with a lime because I think it is supposed to be a Mexican style lager. Cal said in an interview that I've seen repeatedly replayed on the Ryan Roland Smith show that
Oh, yeah.
he's a big lager guy and particularly likes Mexican lagers.
All
So
right.
that's what they went with from Scuttlebutt Brewing, but definitely
Fair
very
enough.
solid. Seek it out if you haven't already.
Oh, my God. It wasn't an ad for San Juan Seltzer. They're the sponsor of the Ryan Roland Smith show, right? Are they still?
I don't remember if they came up. I do recall that that was the case at one point. Yeah. All right. Congrats to the Everett Aqua Sox, who won the Northwest League title Saturday by beating the Eugene Emeralds, the hated
Yeah.
Eugene Emeralds,
Woo! I just
3-1.
learned that was their nickname, and I hate you, Eugene Emeralds. Take that,
Almost as
Sox
much
for
as you
life.
hate the San Diego Wave in the championship series for their first league title since 2010. They then got to
Woo!
celebrate Sunday at T-Mobile Park with the Mariners.
There we go.
Pretty cool for the Mariners affiliate. So shouts to the Aqua Sox.
Another way we're better than Eugene, Oregon.
Congrats to UW Duo of Amanda and Heather Mall from a real track and field university who tied for sixth in the pole vault at the World Athletics Championships in Tokyo this week, posting an exactly identical series of jumps.
Is it bad that I'm kind of disappointed about it being six, or is that really good? You tell
I
me.
think it's pretty good for
I thought we were setting world records here
sophomores,
constantly.
rising juniors in college.
Okay, by the time
They're
that they're
setting
seniors.
NCAA records. They're not
Okay.
setting world
Okay.
records.
That, you know what? I will say that's all that matters is being better at pole vaulting is what we're talking about here.
Yes.
Pole vaulting at the best track and field school in the country.
Correct.
Founded on track and field. I said to Luca yesterday, he was looking up famous graduates of different high schools because I was insulting the oh my God, the Kennedy football program. And really, like the graduates are not great. in terms of football. You did not appear in the Mount Rainier one. But he was like, Billy Joe Hobert, who's that? And I was like, if Billy Joe Hobert doesn't happen, Oregon is nothing. They're in the Mountain West right now. I somehow traced it all back to Billy Joe Hobert, to everything that happened. Kenny Wheaton, none of it happens. It's all undone. They're basically Oregon State.
Phil Knight would never have taken interest in Oregon football if not for UW losing at Oregon in 1994 or 95, question mark?
Maybe they'd be a basketball school.
We're actually going to talk about that era of UW football. It's going to come
up. Are we going to remember some years?
No, I'm not going to remember some years. We do not have time for that. Lastly, this week.
Don't tempt me.
Don't threaten me with a good time. You know, we'll see how.
Did remember a year. We already remember 1997.
It's true. We'll see how far off track the UW football season would have to go for us to start remembering a season as opposed to the current season. But lastly, this week, congrats to J. Michael Kelly and the UA Beacon Electric on winning San Diego Bay Fair on Sunday, as well as to Andrew Tate, as always, not that one, in the U91 on winning the High Points Championship in the final race of the H1 Unlimited season.
You said we can't remember years and you're toasting to hydroplanes, so.
That took like 30 seconds. All right, with that, it is time for your favorite segment.
We're getting straight into it.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at ya.
I've been pretty resistant to the whole Etsy witch thing for these last couple of weeks. You may have noticed it was a notable omission from any of our discussions on this very podcast when something like that normally would be something we'd be all up on. And I can't exactly say why, but mostly it just felt kind of stupid. It felt like the kind of thing that places like sports radio and evening news get excited about, to have a story to run on, and then they quickly forget about it after. But I'm also offended about it from the aspect of witchcraft. Basically, to me, witchcraft is about putting certain energies into the world, helping humans process what their goals and focuses are, not curses or sports wishes or whatever. But also, this is my time of year. I spend literally every single night watching a movie of some kind involving something supernatural for the most part. Cursed houses, possessed children, supernatural killer clowns who ride on tricycles and use their victims' heads as Halloween candy bowls. Demons awakened because you stole their toy in the wilderness. Mass killers, chainsaw massacres, ghosts of every single possible kind. Unhinged AI, Jerry Jones. Demons awoken from old scriptures. Mummies, vampires, cursed hotel rooms, The Craft starring Neve Campbell and Fairuza Balk, everything. So anyway. In the top of the ninth inning tonight, with the Mariners trailing 7-4, I was like, fuck it. If the Mariners come back and win this game, I'll be in on the Etsy witch thing. I'll do a whole take about how they'll never lose again because of it. I don't care. And then Dom Canzone grounded into a double play, and J.P. Crawford got out to end the Mariners' 10-game win streak. And so dashed were the dreams of the Etsy witch Mariners. But after watching all of those movies above, the reality isn't that we pay Etsy witches or gross $90.3 million at the box office, including international, because humans are trying to come to terms with the supernatural. No. We use the supernatural to help us understand the physical world which we live in right now. And of course, that is why the Etsy witch was so compelling. Because it was hard to come to terms with this particular Mariners team with their no holes missing the playoffs. It just didn't compute how this team could be so bad despite being so good. But the reality for Mariners fans is much scarier. The haunted house is in Seattle, Washington, because it's completely unfamiliar territory for us. And it's scary to walk into the cold, dark nights of October with faith that we'll be okay. The reality is that the Mariners were able to withstand a single loss in Kansas City without it all falling apart. That is a ghostly thought for fans who have witnessed the last two seasons and also the 20 seasons before then. Even after a loss, we have to go forward like people possessed with confidence that the Mariners will make the playoffs and trust a 97% playoff odds, but also the absolutely demonic second best chance to win the World Series of anyone in baseball. It doesn't take an Etsy witch to recognize that where the Mariners stand right now, in reality, is a very scary place to be. But we have to open our eyes as we enter the haunted house that is October and have faith that Fangraphs will save us, even if the Mariners runs allowed on the season is 666.
It took a while to put together the hot takes, but well worth it. You basically hit us with, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure.
The actual runs allowed is 666.
I mean, I trusted you. I believed you that you did not make that up.
Oh, so good.
The only thing that would be better is if the Mariners' win percentage was back to 54%, but sadly, they are still rounded to 55%. Look, the Mariners were not going to win every game the rest of the season, as disappointing as that is to note. And it's fine. It's fine to be a half game back of the Astros right now. They have this series upcoming that is going to go a long way towards determining whether they can win the AL West or, you know, instead be looking at the wild card situation. So, yeah, everything is fine. That's what I have to report on the Mariners.
Everything is fine.
There's really not that much analysis to do on the Mariners right now, I guess I would say.
It was nice that Gino, I mean, seeing Julio be top 10 in war in the league is like, I mean, it's an incredible season that Julio has put together. And that's in all of baseball, right? I mean, it's been a monster season for him and just like very quietly. But obviously they head into this Astros series. And that's kind of it for now. I mean, the goal is to win tomorrow. I mean, obviously, if the Stros lose, then it would be very nice. And they just have to win the series is kind of, for the AL West, like, the Stros have it at home, but it is Wu, Kirby, and Gilbert, and there's kind of nothing more that you could ask for from the Mariners. Everybody has this positioned, and I think we kind of look at it as, like, this is a three-game series that they're playing against the Astros. It's basically a playoff series in many ways. The Mariners are probably making the playoffs either way, but if they win the series, their chances of... And I mean, if they win it commandingly, it's even better. But their chances of winning the ALS are much higher because of that, especially with, I guess we don't know what the Dodgers situation is going to be in the last series of the year. But then the Rockies right after that. And I think Rockies players are going to be pretty excited about going home and vacationing for the offseason at that point. But the Mariners have a situation. They have not played great teams lately. They have a situation, if they win two of three from the Astros, I think we treat it as a portent of the playoffs, which is, can they go into a hard series on the road and can they beat the Astros two times? Because, I mean, there's scenarios that they play the Astros in the playoffs and there's going to be series where basically these three pitchers have to go win games or they have to go at least win two of those games. So it's a very fascinating one that is set up over the weekend, is what I'll say. I'm going to be at the Savannah Bananas on Friday.
Well, there you go.
In Seattle. But I'm like, I mean, it is like hang on to every pitch level, you know?
It's playoffs before the playoffs, as you said. Yeah, I mean, the Dodgers situation, I don't feel like we should probably count on the Dodgers having clinched before that series starts. They're a game and a half up on the Padres as we record this. And it's a pretty stark difference between being the third division champion or you'd be the second wild card and have to start the playoffs on the road in all likelihood for the loser of the NL West. So a lot at stake for them on whether they can do that. They are currently leading the Phillies in the top of the eight, so could go to two games up in the NL West. But it still seems likely that they will have something to play for, at least at the outset of that series.
Are the Stros off tomorrow? Yeah, so I mean, like, maybe this is too confident, but the idea that the Mariners and the Astros can go into the series, that an entire season of baseball can have been played pointing toward September 19th, 20th, and 21 and be exactly tied.
Yep.
And somebody's going to win it. Somebody's going to win the series. Whoever comes out of that series is going to be, you know, their fates are going to be completely different. Like
that is a bold take that someone is going to win the three-game series.
But I know it's fun. It's fun that is what's going to happen. You know what I mean? There's still like daylight after. It's not, the season isn't over, but the playoff odds and the fan graphs is going to look very different depending on who wins that series. But I'm feeling pretty freaking confident in the Mariners right now. Even that loss to the Royals, I was like, They fought. They scored the run in the ninth. They fought. They are playing very good baseball.
Well, they gave the Royals that one by not starting Dom Canzone. We should have toasted this. Dom Canzone, three home runs on Tuesday night. An amazing night for Seattle Doms. Doms in Seattle sports on Tuesday. And a lot of Italian gestures during the midst of that one. Dynamite drop in money.
There's Robles has been pretty good. They could have started Canzone at DH. Dan is way too scared of splits. I guess I'd need like a little bit more info on the Garver Canzone splits there, but I'm like, motherfucker went 5 for 5 and hit three homers. Just let him play.
Well,
right?
it allows Cal Raleigh to get a day off of catching. So there is the benefit to that. I will, because if you're going to play Mitch Garver some of the time at catcher, which you probably are, it does make more sense, I suppose, to do that against lefties.
Just still, like, the day after it happens, also Harry Ford's on the team. I don't know if anybody remembers, but they also could have just played Canzone in right field.
We haven't recorded since the Harry Ford walk-off, have we? That was a moment. Well, we have recorded since then. We did not discuss the Mariners that much in that podcast. Harry Ford walking off the game with a sacrifice fly on the first pitch. It is the last guy on the bench pinch hitting for a pitcher because the Mariners had given up their DH, assuming that spot would not come up in the order again. Pretty wild stuff as part of a T-Mobile season of destiny. Like, it hasn't always been a season of destiny on the road for the Mariners, pending Etsy Witches, but at T-Mobile, they have had some pretty amazing endings, including Cole Young walking a game off in his major league debut in another situation where it did not require a hit.
It was another one where, like, okay, let me set up the situation if I remember correctly. There are runners on first and second, nobody out, and Robles came in to bunt, pinch hit to bunt, I believe, right?
Correct.
For Luke Rayleigh.
That sounds right.
This is like a week ago. So the hypothetical situation that Dan set up for himself was he wanted to move runners to second and third. For Harry Ford, who's had like two major league at-bats before then.
I believe there was a batter prior to Harry Ford.
I don't think so. Was there?
Okay, let me review this situation.
I'm pretty sure Dan set it up for Harry Ford.
Well, I guess if it was a sacrifice fly, yes, there was one out, so that does make sense. And Leo Rivas, we have not mentioned also Leo Rivas with a walk-off home run. Just wild stuff for the Mariners.
Was this Angels 7-6? Is that game?
Yeah. Yes, this was Thursday night.
Harry Ford. If there's anything that makes me nervous, it is that, Robles hit for Rayleigh. Robles reached on bunt single. Robles is also fucking terrible at bunting. They intentionally walked Gino, and then Robles bunted, and then they Harry Ford pinch hit. So Dan made the decision to do this. It worked out. It was a great moment for Harry Ford. I think that the baseball is going to get, I am fascinated to see in the playoffs what it looks like for Dan, because there's a lot of opportunity. Every decision that he makes is going to be so magnified over these next couple of weeks. And if shit like this doesn't work out, the lights are going to become very bright on Dan Wilson. So he's got a couple of weeks to figure it out. It's not going to happen, but like, that is the one thing that gives me pause. And, imagine that Harry Ford doesn't hit that sack fly. Like, it's going to matter a lot more in a playoff game.
Anything else on the Mariners?
Nope. It's been fun. It's been fun.
It has been fun. I agree. And big series coming up. They got to get through Kansas City on Thursday to complete this. But then the fun begins in Houston. All right, let's get into the round.
It would be very fun if they win that game. Just to me, to be even, like,
I agree.
Exactly tied.
Even Steven.
But the buffer and the wild card as well, it's 2.5 games right now, even with the loss,
yes.
Right? It does feel like, I don't want to, it's not locked up. The Mariners still need to win games. Other teams still need to play games. We talked about this before, the multiple avenues to the playoffs, because that's the first goal, is just get to the playoffs. Winning the division would be nice, but like, they've gotten some help along the way. So especially the Rangers skidding, and the Guardians had a pretty big hole to dig out of.
All right, The Seattle Kraken are opening training camp Thursday under new coach Lane Lambert. Most interesting question is probably whether 2024 first-round pick Berkeley Catton can make the team at age 19 after playing for the Spokane Chiefs in the WHL last season. Catton is still too young to be eligible for the Kraken's AHL official affiliate in Coachella Valley, so the options are generally either to make the Kraken roster or otherwise return to the Chiefs to play in the WHL against teenagers. Seattle Sounders, a tough week as they felt the hangover of the League's Cup playing their two opponents in the League's Cup. A disappointing result Saturday at home as they drew against a very shorthanded LA Galaxy squad. Sounders took a 2-0 lead behind an early Jesus Ferreira goal and one from Danny Masovsky in the 41st, but quickly conceded prior to halftime and then allowed the equalizer in the 87th minute to share points. They created 3.4 XG, but conceded 2.9 in yet another defensive offensive tilted game with a combined 34 shots, 15 of them on goal. Good news from that one. Jordan Morris and Albert Rusnak both returned to the lineup off the bench. On Tuesday, Inter Miami got some measure of payback for the League's Cup final with a dominant 3-1 win. Miami opened the scoring in the 12th minute through Jordi Alba and made it 2-0 with Lionel Messi, finally matching Paul Rothrock's total in their head-to-head matchups. It was then 3-0 Miami early in the second half. Sanders did pull one back with Obed Vargas scoring, and we're closer on XG than you might think, 2.4 to 1.8, but never threatened a result in this 3-1 loss. Rusnak, though, did play the entire second half, while Jordan Morris came on for the final 30 minutes, his longest action since July 12th. Sounders taking just 1 point for those two matches, still fourth in the West standings, but suddenly have both Portland and Austin in their rearview mirror, in addition to LAFC in fifth, having more points per match with two in hand. That makes Sunday's game in Austin crucial. Los Verdes have outperformed their -5 goal differential as compared to +8 for the Sounders. They've also got a busy week. They were on Wednesday night visiting the Minnesota United in the League in the U.S. Open Cup semifinals, I should say. I don't see a score for that one, but I will full time and try to look it up and see what happened for Austin.
The Valks are in just a battle. Do you have that game up on a second screen?
I don't have the bandwidth to have it up on a second screen, but I'm monitoring the game
score.
Cast. Yeah. 2-1 Austin won that semifinal in Minnesota. So a nice
is that
win
the
for them.
Oh wow, look at the links. Is that bandwidth like internet wise or just emotional bandwidth to do this podcast and also monitor Valk's links?
Definitely internet wise.
Okay. I could watch many WNBA playoff games and still do this podcast proficiently.
That may say something about our respective role in this podcast. All right, Seattle Reign FC, a scary incident.
I was doing that take and just being like, remember the 1 week you did takes and I did the rundown? It was bad.
Scary incident interrupted Sunday's Seattle Reign game is Racing Louisville midfielder Savannah DeMello collapsed just before halftime and was taken to a local hospital by ambulance. The game was abandoned at that point with Racing's team remaining in Seattle, both to support DeMello and possible resumption of that. DeMello, who was diagnosed with Graves' disease and hyperthyroidism last year after an incident on the pitch, is in stable condition, awaiting results of additional testing. As a result, the game resumed at the start of the second half on Sunday, with both teams sporting wristbands in tribute to DeMello. Jess Fishlock, on minutes earlier as a substitute, grabbed the winner in the 90th minute as the Reign claimed full points before several players celebrated at the Storm playoff game that night, all sitting directly in front of me in the media section. The win moved the Reign into a four-team tie for third in the WSL standings on 30 points, with six matches to go, 5 points clear of the cutoff for the playoffs. They do have the worst tiebreaker of those four teams in terms of goal differential. But the you seem shocked. Is that something that happened in the Lynx game or by that particular stat?
No, the fantasy waivers happen on Wednesday now instead of Thursday?
They do, yes.
Did you move that up?
That was a change that we made last year. I forget what it was related to, but we did make that change.
Go get a defense.
Way to be on top of it.
I had waivers in. I had claims in.
Okay.
It wasn't that. It was just I didn't know that the...
So the Reign, because of the resumption, will have an atypically quick turnaround for Saturday's game at the Kansas City Current, who are 14 points ahead of anyone else with a 16-2-2 record and a preposterous +28 goal differential. Nobody else in the NWSL is better than +10. So... Not, you know, if the Brain can scratch out a result on the road here that will be a terrific outcome for them in this game.
Me and Katie really fighting for Troy Franklin.
Oregon legend Troy Franklin, who propping up Bo Nix for a long period of time.
Many years.
All right, quickly on this one, a bit of a bummer. Tacoma five-star prospect Olivia Edwards announced her commitment to Tennessee. So UW women's basketball was in the mix there, certainly hoping to get the best prospect out of the Seattle area in a period of time. But Edwards choosing to go elsewhere, getting congratulated by Peyton Manning on her commitment, which is pretty wild.
Tennessee isn't a very good basketball program, though, right?
They have very little history, yes.
Is there NIL? I'm sure that there is NIL money, but like,
yes.
Are there certain schools? Because women's college basketball is a place that I could see radically different. You know, like everybody cares about, for the most part, football. Everybody kind of cares about men's college basketball. Women's college basketball is something where I could see that programs within the Big Two conferences having, I guess in basketball, I'll say it's a Big Three. I'll give it a Big Four in basketball. But could there be like drastically different NIL budgets for women's college basketball between the different teams, more so than maybe some of the other sports?
I would say probably not, to the extent that it's not like Tennessee isn't investing in football and men's basketball. So I don't know that they're pulling money away from that in the current.
But is there
era.
A few, like, even if it's like in a UConn, like, right? Like, or does UConn not need to spend an NIL?
I don't know what UConn does or doesn't need to do under the current rules, which have not actually taken place for a full recruiting cycle as yet.
Wait, why?
Because they didn't apply to this year's recruits. This year's recruits were able to sign NIL agreements prior to the house.
You're
deal
talking about
signed.
Like the next year, basically, where it's like budgets. Teams have budgets.
Yes.
And those are budgets that are for like the athletic program in general.
Direct NIL, yes.
Okay, but you can allocate them in like between the different sports, however
Correct.
You so fit.
Yes.
Okay.
But I don't think that Tennessee is choosing to allocate a larger portion of it to women's basketball, because again, it's not like they're like, football, who cares? I saw a few fans at that Tennessee game against Georgia on Saturday.
Well, it's almost like the bigger programs.
They have been very good at men's basketball under Rick Barnes as well.
Would have to do
it
less.
They might be a men's basketball school.
Right.
I guess your argument is that like there are legitimate NIL opportunities, sponsorship opportunities for players at a school like Tennessee.
I suppose. No, I literally was thinking, I mean, teams are spending more money than this house money. Are you joking? Like, who's regulating it? It's happening. Billy Joe Hobert ain't walking through that door. He already made Oregon not be in the Big West.
There is a regulatory board. Whether that board will have any enforcement power remains to be seen. But this was a report. Matt Norlander of CBS Sports had an article on this earlier this week that basically NCAA men's basketball teams are not currently signing recruits for 2026 because they're waiting to see what the rules are going to be, or like they're not offering them very much right now because they don't want to commit to players, not knowing exactly what the framework is going to be.
In case they end up with less money than they think they'll end up with?
Or that they stick with this amount of money, and therefore the large amounts that players were able to make during this academic year, the current academic year, will not be available in 26-27 because of regulations on NHL, NIL Act collectives.
It just feels like we just redid the whole, like, yes, players are getting paid more, which is good because they are getting direct payments from schools, but we're just redoing the same shit where people get under the table payments.
Wow, it's almost like history is always repeating itself. Who could have seen that coming?
All right, fine. Fine.
this is a pretty thrilling ending here of Valkyrie's Links. Do I need to pull this up?
Be I was going to say, damned? I wasn't that thrilled by this podcast, but...
Well, we'll give live coverage hours later of the end of Lynx Valkyrie. Valkyrie.
Just in terms of like excited noise. God, I thought the Falcons defense was pretty good going at Carolina. This is steal just to get them off the waiver wire.
Yeah, it's probably true. All right, so
I mean,
talk
I
would
have got Chris Boswell last week, and it's just like just on Sunday morning.
Should we talk about the Seattle Storm's thrilling finish on Tuesday?
I'm like weirdly mad about it, but I'm happy. No, I'm happy about it because of what really happened in this game.
Dominique Malunga?
Dominique Malunga ascension.
Look, it turned out to be what an amazing time to write a feature story on the friendship and pick and roll partnership between Skylar Diggins and Nneka Ogwumike. Nneka scores the first 8 points for the Storm, 11 points in the first quarter. Skylar Diggins with 15 in the second quarter to keep them in the game. And then the final play of this one, Skylar Diggins in the two-woman game with Nneka Ogwumike scoring a pull-up slash floater with 4.2 seconds left to push the Storm's lead to three. Jewell Loyd at the other end, wide open look for a three-pointer. Just in amazing, like, not like, ha-ha, how did she miss this? Situation, because no three-pointer in that situation is ever going to be that high probability, but more like a, oh boy, Storm got away with one there and misses it, and the Storm stay alive with a game two victory in their first round series and force a deciding game three Thursday in Las Vegas against the Aces. But yes, you're right. In between those two things, independent of Skylar Diggins and Nneka Ogwumike, Dominique Malunga totally changed this game with her defense on Asia Wilson, as well as her contributions at the offensive end in the fourth quarter. It was everything that we've been building towards all season long. Malunga, this was a great stat from ESPN Research, became the first teenager in either NBA or WNBA history with consecutive double-doubles in the playoffs, and it's her first two playoff games of her
That's
career.
awesome. I mean, a plus 11 led the team in plus minus in this game. And it felt like in the second half, I mean, it's a tight rotation. They're getting her more minutes, still probably not enough minutes, but if that's what you need to get there, that's fine.
I mean, she had foul trouble in the first quarter, in the first half, had three fouls and came out of the game for the last couple of minutes when she might have finished the half at that point. So that was a factor in it. And then, I do think Noe was probably saving some of those fouls for the stretch run. I don't know if you knew for sure that Malunga was going to finish the game, but you had to keep that on the table as a possibility. Oof, Cheshire Zandalasini misses at the buzzer and Minnesota escapes. We will not have four game threes in the WNBA first round.
So anyway, we turn our attention to the Valks off season.
Name
I
of them
probably
what
you
you
could probably have a pretty good answer about what they should do, right?
what they should what the Valkyries should do.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's tough to say because I don't know who's actually considering changing teams in free agency. I gotta say, I'm sure they're gonna put in a call to old Nneka Ogwumike about whether she wants to come back to the Bay Area. I would be confident of that, but so far Nneka happy in Seattle. I think this game, like, I was expecting the Storm to be a lot more competitive in this one. They came out much more physical, much more intense at the start of this one, even though they actually were down a little bit early in the game and trailed most of it. I kind of thought they were going to be fake competitive, that it was going to be like, oh, they're fouling at the end and they're like down five, but they don't really have a chance to win. But down nine, with a little more over 4 minutes to go, back-to-back threes from Skylar Diggins and Erica Wheeler, a big
I
one
mean,
in the
you thought it
corner.
was over at that point, right?
I thought it was pretty over, yeah.
What was the whole vibe like in the building during the game?
I think we've talked about this. Like, the vibe all season, even though the Storm had been losing so many games at home in the second half, has been very positive. Like, the Storm crowd is not as online as we are, as I guess I would say. There's not the degree of grumbling about, oh, the late game offense in that situation that you might see in the Discord.
Fair enough.
So they were very supportive throughout it, and then, just went to another level down the stretch. And Dominique Malunga, so Asia Wilson does not score in the final 7 minutes of this one. She banged her elbow in the third quarter, and there was some question of to what degree that sort of contributed to her not being a factor down the stretch. But you watch sort of the highlight packages that got put together of the end of this game, and it looks like a lot of credit to Malunga and her length, which she was able to do defensively to make life difficult for Asia Wilson. She, had a couple of opportunities late, including a shot with the Aces down one in the final minute before that Skylar Diggins bucket to ice it, and didn't get particularly good looks and missed both of them. There's also a play where Malunga switches out on Chelsea Gray and forces her into a very difficult long three-pointer on a switch. Like the defensive versatility. Obviously, this is not new to us. Izzy Magbegor has been doing many of these same things, but the difference with the Malunga is that she's big enough also to like really present a challenge to someone like Asia Wilson one-on-one, which has sort of been the one weak spot of the Storm defense over the last few years here. So she is very much the
Is
timeline.
that something that they did in game one as well, or?
I like they just were never in it enough to do that sort of thing, I guess I'd say.
It wasn't close enough to even have a strategy.
I mean, they had strategies, but like everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth, and they got punched in the mouth pretty repeatedly at the start of that game, I guess I would say.
So heading toward game three, then obviously the deciding game three tomorrow night, tonight probably as you're listening to this, is it just hang on and try to be close in the second half?
I definitely think like look for all the Storm's issues in close games. Interesting, the Aces did officially report no injuries on their injury report. I was starting to wonder because one thing, odd thing that happened after this game, Asia Wilson was scheduled to be part of their post-game press conference, was not made put on the podium. Instead, it was Kirsten Bell who scored 7 points in this game, who appeared alongside Jewell Loyd post-game. I like when you start to expect things with from the Storm, that's when things go wrong. And when you don't expect things, like when they're down 9 with 4 minutes left in an elimination game, that's when things go well.
So you're saying the strategy is to be down 9 with 4 minutes left?
You don't want to be down more than 9, but be down precisely 9.
Exactly 9. Fine. I
I
just know that situation is going to happen tomorrow. They're probably still going to lose.
mean, yes, they're probably still going to lose the series. Like the Aces are clear favorite, clear and comfortable favorites here. They're at home. They are the team with the experience advantage. They are the team that had won 17 games in a row before that losing streak was came to an end on Tuesday. All of those things, but at least the Storm, whatever happens, you know, as long as they don't lose again by 25, like they went out showing that they can be competitive with anyone in the WNBA, which is what we kind of wanted to see from this team and what we did see in the regular season against the best teams.
So I typically think about like a basketball game as basically like if you get to a game seven, game three, a deciding game, anybody can win, right? If everybody's healthy, it's not like, you know,
Yeah.
unless the star player of the other team like gets severely injured at halftime and the cheating team wins. But like what would you say? I saw an ESPN thing that I think it said the Aces, like their percentage chances of winning was like
BPI.
64%.
Yeah, that's
That
too low
felt
to me.
kind of low.
I would say about 70, 75, somewhere in that range.
So if we were doing percentage chance of victory, you think it's 30? Because to me, you always talk
25 to
about like
30.
deciding game sevens in NBA playoff series. The home team wins almost all of them.
No, not anymore, actually.
That's changed a little bit.
Yeah, there's been a very good track record for road teams in game sevens lately. But what I would say is that you almost never should favor the road team in a game seven
Well, you
situation.
wouldn't favor the road team, but I was like 36% chance of winning is pretty good.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I haven't looked at like what the line would actually imply in terms of the,
Do you
let's
think the game
see.
being shorter is a factor in that as well? Like, is there more randomness losing those 8 minutes?
A tiny bit. It's not a big deal. The market would imply about a 23% chance of the Storm winning.
Okay, which is a worse than you said.
Yes.
I mean, that's a pretty overwhelming favorite.
Yeah, both they and Atlanta are 7.5 point favorites at home in game three.
I mean, I guess basically there's a chance that the Aces just win this game by 25 points again.
I think it would be unlikely given the way the Storm season has gone. But yeah, it's certainly on the table. And like the odds of the Storm winning a blowout seem very low.
Who is next if whoever wins the series?
So the series are on the nights with each other. So it'd be Atlanta and Indiana, the winner of that one, with
In that
the three
deciding game
host game.
three.
And again, 7.5 point favorites. And game one of the semifinals will be on Sunday.
Wow, they're right at it. It's a five game series.
Yeah, and the Storm could not host that series no matter what happens. The Atlanta and Indiana series is the 7 seed. So they'd be, if they were able to win, traveling out on the road to either Atlanta or Indiana.
And I assume you would say basically, maybe this is like the wrong question to ask. Storm want to win these series, or obviously the Storm want to win, but like as a fan, it's nothing but cheering for the Storm. Just there's no positive in losing.
I mean, I suppose that there are some people that want major changes this offseason. So, you know, but I think that possibly some people on this podcast as you gesture, but come on, winning games is fun. Like that's the whole point. It's not, you know, it's not like a hopeless team. Certainly, like if they got in that series against either Atlanta or Indiana, like they'd be underdogs, but weirdly, Indiana has been the worst matchup for them this season. They've lost all three games to the Fever, but like they would be underdogs in that matchup, but they split with the Dream. They were certainly plenty competitive with them. It's not a series they couldn't win.
I guess that was kind of my question, is basically like Danny Dimes, phenomenal quarterback now, Danny Dimes wins a playoff game. And then all of a sudden you're extending Danny Dimes just because of a thing, you know, like a random event happened and it costs you time and money, basically.
There's no situation in the WNBA that can be as impactful as extending a quarterback in the NFL, is I guess I would put it to you.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, it's not like, oh no, they re-signed Neko Ogumeke. How dare they? So there you go. That'll be 6:30 p.m. Pacific on Thursday night. We have not heard from the third Pelton brother, Noah Cohen, whether he's attending this game since he is going to be in town for it.
Really? He's in Vegas?
He is in Vegas.
You gotta go, Noah.
Yeah.
World Series of Poker?
A little late for that. That's been wrapped up for a bit now.
Has it? What is he in town for?
I don't know. There's lots of conferences, and I didn't press the issue here. Football.
There's all-night craps. There's Old Town.
Speaking of things that are not in the season that you think they should be in, or they're 2 months off when you think they should be, the Apple Cup coming up on Saturday, the first on-campus edition of this rivalry in different conferences, and a very different Washington State team than the one that beat the Huskies last year at Lumen Field. After going 8-4 and going to the Holiday Bowl last year, Jake Dukert took the Wake Forest job and was replaced by former South Dakota State coach Jimmy Rogers, who led the Jackrabbits to an FCS title in their first season in Division I. And the Cougars then added over 70 new players, most notably having to replace quarterback John Mateer, who transferred to Oklahoma. Do you have any thoughts on John Mateer at this point? People are pretty hyped.
That's the look of me being wrong. No.
Oh, no.
I've been right about things and I've been wrong about things. And that is the thing that I might have been wrong about.
All takes Tristan. Look, you don't get to be All Takes Tristan without being wrong about some things. Really, his QBR is still not that good.
I'm looking forward to when college football QBR is a little settled down.
Right.
Like in a couple weeks, I think we'll have a pretty good sense of like where people actually are, because I don't know. I'm sure it adjusts for things, but like, you know, as you get to week 8, week 9, then you kind of have a good sense. There was like I should not be looking at this because it's stupid bullshit, but like a thing where I can't remember who it was on like a CBS thing where they're like our weekly quarterback ranking. And it's like people are jumping up like 35 spots. And I'm like, sure. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think like maybe Haynes King is like now the second best quarterback in college. Probably not. You know, like I don't think things actually change that much. But is Mateer like a good quarterback? Yeah, I feel like I pretty much have to give up the ghost on that one.
Yeah, I agree.
On my argument of he's not good.
Not that many rushing EPA this far this season. I think he actually has less than DeMond Williams in DeMond Williams' two games. Yeah, he does.
I mean, that's like a better sign that Mateer is good also, though. Like,
right.
So we'll see, though.
But you know who has a lot of rushing EPA?
Who?
Haynes King.
Well, yeah, Haynes King rules.
So alarm bells started ringing after a narrow 13-10 win in Jimmy Rogers' opener over their Palouse rivals, Idaho. Then were briefly silenced by an impressive 36-13 home win over San Diego State. But nobody was expecting a 59-10 demolition at North Texas on Saturday. The Cougs were down to 56 points before scoring a late TD. They committed 5 turnovers and averaged just 4.4 yards per play while allowing 6.5 to the Mean Green. Cougars dropped 27 spots in FPI down to 114, better than just two Mountain West teams, including San Diego State, which may not have been the great get for the Pac-12 that we thought. They rank 133rd in offensive efficiency.
Did we think that's it? Were we talking about how great of a get San Diego State was? First off, it's one season. Second, they're bringing San Diego State to the Pac-12 because of the market that they're in. It just happens to be a college in San Diego, which is a big enough city to be a Pac-12 city now. But it's,
actually much too big a city to be a Pac-12 city now.
We were not talking about that. I'm just putting that on the record.
Sure. Somewhat predictably after this, Rodgers announced a renewed quarterback competition after Jackson Potter, sophomore, won that with seniors Zevi Eckhaus and Pitt transfer Julian Duggar in fall camp. Potter has completed 70% of passes, but for just 6.4 yards per attempt and threw three picks on Saturday. Rodgers then told reporters on Wednesday that he has now chosen a starting quarterback for the game. He declined to name.
I'll never tell.
Quarterback. The Jed Fish is going to be up all week trying to figure out, Ryan Walter, trying to figure out who it could be. Fish mentioned that Eckhaus and Potter, pretty similar stylistically. Duggar is more of the rushing threat of these three and would present a slightly different look. Outside of the San Diego State game, their running game has just 67 yards from running backs. Kirby Voorhees has been the primary back after following Rodgers from South Dakota State. He's been okay, but fellow Jackrabbit Angel Johnson averaging 1.4 yards per carry thus far. Cougar holdovers Tony Freeman and Josh Meredith lead the receiving core, with Freeman already having more receiving yards than last season. Freshman Carter Pabst has been a big play threat and growing opportunities, averaging 24.8 yards per reception, while holdover tight end Trey Lechner has a pair of touchdowns, so keep an eye on him in the red zone. Defense has actually remained competitive. They rank 67th in FBI efficiency, have forced to just two turnovers all season, both against Idaho, but held their first two opponents to a combined 166 yards passing. So this is probably going to be, to a degree, a strength-on-strength matchup. Should mention at the outset, Huskies 20.5-point favorites in this one, in Pullman.
Yeah, it's just a very radically different Wazoo team. I mean, like, they lost what was, at some capacities, considered to be the best recruit in the transfer portal. So the amount of talent that they had outgoing in the transfer portal, players to a bunch to Wake Forest, obviously going to Jake Diggert, to Vanderbilt, to Ole Miss, to UW, to Kentucky, to Purdue, to Oklahoma, obviously, Arizona State, Arizona, like,
and their incoming guys were not coming from those schools.
They lost Ethan O'Connor to Miami. Like, they lost Wayshon Parker to Utah. And even seeing Buda Alekto here, I'm just like, damn, I didn't really notice this guy at Wazoo, but like, he is good. They lost a whole roster's worth of players in the transfer portal. And then they were in the remains of the Pac-12 to be able to go get new players. I think what was more impressive was how much Jake Dickert kept that team together last year.
Without question.
Seems like, I think he's doing a pretty good job this year at Wake Forest as well. But like, this is what this team is going to look like for a chunk of time.
I think that, give Jimmy Rodgers some time to establish himself at Washington State. I don't think they're going to be as far down as they are right now. Like, they shouldn't be down relative to Mountain West programs, as we were saying at the start, in terms of FPI.
I will give that a probably. I mean, he's coming in the year after the mass exodus. You know, there was like some exodus before then, but
and I think there's something to be said for, like, I think that Jimmy Rodgers might be an awesome coach, but going directly from South Dakota State to Washington State, like, when a big part of the game right now is having your players follow you as transfers, like, those guys are, that is a huge step up in competition. That is not, you know, I mean, Kevin DeBoer didn't actually ultimately bring that many guys from Fresno State with him. But like, Fresno State to UW is one thing. South Dakota State to Washington State isn't entirely different. So.
Yeah, there were a few Jackrabbits who owned them. Actually, quite a few. I mean, a pretty big chunk of Jackrabbits. But like, yeah, I mean, it's a different tier of player. It's not like he was moving up from, yeah, like you were saying, Fresno State, Arizona, something like that.
Which is sort of like the usual direction that these things go. That was an unusually large jump, but, you know,
It's not the kind of job that, you know, like a high tier coach is. If you're like a hot defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator, somebody like that, it's probably not the type of job that you go look for.
Agreed, but there's a chance that Jimmy Rogers, you know, eventually is a Kalen DeBoer, but that just was so much more gradual in Kalen DeBoer's case. So
sure, fair enough. I mean, I you're saying because he moved from like the Dakotas to there was just like a lot of steps along the way.
Exactly.
For him, there was Indiana, there was Fresno State. You know, like there were jumps along the way, but I mean, again, all credit to Jake Dickert for how good the program was at that point. I hope that this game is not close.
I hope so too. Percentage that chances of victory?
I mean, they have to be like 90%. That might even be based upon, like, you know, looking at the, it's a 20.5 point spread. Like,
yeah. I mean, FPI gives them a 93% chance of winning.
I will forever be nervous. How about that?
I agree.
This is by far the most important game on the schedule for Wazoo.
Well, which is more important, home versus Oregon State or at Oregon State?
This is it, though, like, for these players. And granted, a lot of them are from South Dakota, you know what I mean? But like, they haven't had the time in the same way that there's still a rivalry between these two teams. It is just different right now, given where they're at. And for a lot of the players, I think given more time, especially if it's a feisty Wazoo team, they're going to come into that game really wanting to beat UW. But this is a transitional year game. Yep. So I'm hoping the Huskies cover the spread. I'm hoping the Huskies, because to me, the main thing is look good, be healthy heading into Ohio State.
Oh, we didn't talk about the injury situation. I guess we should have talked about that a little bit. Rasheed Williams did end up having to undergo surgery on his collarbone. So it sounds like it's going to be about 6 weeks for him as far as recovery after that. Tyson McCutcheon also underwent surgery. He's out for the year and would be looking at, you know, possibly getting a medical redshirt to potentially return or play somewhere else for a final season of eligibility. But the good news here on the injury front is that Omari Evans should be available for this one to help step into that void at wide receiver. And this is someone we were counting on to be a starter.
Just want
to
see something from Omari Evans too.
Yeah. And now the freshmen have sort of jumped him with their opportunity to be helpful. Desmond Buck, Raiden Vinesbright have jumped him in the pecking order, but Evans, I think should be in the mix for this one.
Desmond Roebuck.
Yeah.
I think, and maybe you cut out a little bit, but, yeah, it's all still preseason. I mean, like everything is pointing to Ohio State is basically what it is. Just be healthy. And if the Huskies scored 40, 50 points in this game, I'm going to feel pretty good heading into the following week. For me, it's like I've had the shit circled on the calendar for so long, that game, that I have never had a doubt in my mind.
I would tell you, not as long as I have. Takario Davis, also questionable for the Apple Cup.
Why have you had it circled for so long?
Because of the Michigan game last year. Questionable for the Apple Cup after coming down hard on his interception against UC Davis. But, you know, I think they'll probably play it safe with him on this one and be focused on his availability for Ohio State, given the Buckeyes have a little bit of talent at receiver. This is the week we need to go to video so we can get your reactions to all these things.
It almost sucks. Like I mean, I hate that the Apple Cup is like this right now, but like, I'm just like, all these weeks, it's so hard. Even UC Davis, it was like, okay, they put up 70 against UC Davis. You have to feel good about that. But we're not in shock the world territory yet. And there's almost nothing. I mean, save even scoring 70, you know what I mean? Like the Huskies could drop 70 on North Texas and people would be like, that's fine. Or on Wazoo. And people would be like, that's fine. You know, like it wouldn't be that huge of a deal if they did. And so it's like, I just want to get to the place where people really see what this team looks like. And all the Jonah Coleman getting a bunch of yards, touchdowns, like can help his case for once we start talking about Jonah Coleman for Heisman in two weeks.
Wow. All right, let's wrap up with the Seattle Seahawks. Obviously, we talked a lot about their win over the Steelers on the weekend recap pod. Now let's look ahead a little bit more. Seahawks now sit sixth in DVOA ranking, 14th on offense, ninth on defense, and second on special teams, which really doesn't even credit them for the George Helani kickoff recovery touchdown. I don't know exactly what you would describe it as, but you don't get a lot of credit for that in DVOA and still second in special teams. So good work from the Seahawks there. Mike McDonald mentioned on Monday a little bit worse in terms of injury news coming out of that game than we thought at the time. Zach Charbonnet due to a foot injury and Julian Love with the hamstring injury, which he's been dealing with this kind of muscle injury, but that he played through against the Steelers, both did not practice on Wednesday. So we will monitor their availability the rest of the week. Would be interesting if Charbonnet doesn't play to see if George Helani gets an opportunity to play a little bit.
Look great in preseason. I mean,
he's
I think I'd
earned
be
it.
pretty excited about that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. This weekend, the New Orleans Saints come to town. Kellen Moore, homecoming for him, his first season as a head coach with two, not one, but two former University of Washington offensive coordinators on his staff. Idaho Vandals legend Doug Nussmeier is in that role. He was here during the Sark era. And then Jim Lambright era assistant Scott Linehan is a senior offensive assistant. He's no longer field coaching at this stage of his career, but still involved in the mix. So some familiar names there on the coaching staff
He
with the
is
Seattle
digging
Ties.
deep.
Yeah.
I did not realize Doug Nussmeier was. Did I know this? That he was their OC?
I don't know if I mean, it works out very conveniently for
They're
him to
just
be right
setting
there
themselves up to ne for next year.
with Garrett Nussmeier down the road at LSU.
He's actually
So.
younger than I thought. He's only 54. Like, Doug Nussmeier is. I would have guessed that he was a little bit older than that.
I mean,
That is a
he started
fascinating look.
coaching at like age 30, I saw on his Pro Football Reference page in the CFL with the BC Lions of all teams. So this
Hello.
man is no stranger to the Pacific. And I didn't know he's from Portland. That was a today I learned. So the Saints, with very low expectations, over under of 4.5 wins, started 0-2 at home against NFC West opponents, but were competitive in both games. They had the final possession with a chance to tie against Arizona and two drives that could have taken the lead against the Mac Jones-led 49ers. Have you paid any attention to these Saints games?
I mean, I've seen on Red Zone, like I saw the game against the Niners. I took that one. I don't know what the stats say necessarily. I took that one more as a, and of course, not that I have any spin on this, a
Oh,
negative
no.
for the 49ers than I did a positive for the Saints.
I mean, it's tough to say. There's not opponent adjustments yet. It's 2 weeks into the season. Saints ranked 23rd in DVOA, 21st on both offense and defense, and 27th in special teams, which I think if you would have told people before the season,
No,
the
it's
Saints are
not
going to be
embarrassing.
21st on offense, like that would have been a pretty thrilling outcome. With former fourth round pick Spencer Rattler, or fifth round pick Spencer Rattler, who beat out Jake Haener and Tyler Shough for their quarterback job during the preseason. He's completed 65% of his passes, has not thrown an interception. That's the good news. And did have a pretty strong, I think, second half against the Niners last Sunday. But the notable thing here is they definitely have the training wheels on for Spencer Rattler in this Kellen Moore offense. His 8.1 yards per completion rank ahead of only a real, run heavy quarterback, tough to see how he'd ever succeed in the playoffs, named Jalen Hurts. Most notably, you see this show up with Chris Olave, who had averaged at least 12 yards per reception each of his first 4 seasons. He's at 8.3 this year and a ghastly 4.7 yards per target.
It kind of makes sense. I mean, this is about what you'd expect from him at this point, right? Like they have Spencer Rattler and don't make huge mistakes territory right now.
Exactly.
I think the problem is basically it's like they're trying to do this, and this is also what the Seahawks want teams to do.
It's going to
And
be interesting, yes.
if they're able to, they're going to get first downs, right? Like I just don't know how the Saints are going to score more than 16 points. Something like that. I think it's kind of like a race to that number if they're able to hold the Seahawks a little bit. But like, there'll be some field goals, there'll be some first downs. But like, the Seahawks are not going, as long as they tackle surely and don't have any huge mistakes. Like, this is just not the kind of team that can poke at the holes that they have.
Alvin Kamara averaging 4.5 yards per carry thus far. Obviously, very small sample, would be his most since 2020, but notably not a factor at all out of the backfield as a receiver yet. He's averaging 4 yards per reception. So that's probably good news, as he was kind of one of the biggest threats you expected on this offense. Defensively, there's a wild discrepancy. The Saints are 28th in ESPN's pass rush win rate, easy for you to say, but tied for second in the NFL with 8 sacks. And playing opposite Cam Jordan, Carl Granderson shares the league high with 3.5 sacks, already threatening last year's total of 5.5. He did have a career high of 8.5 in 2023, but seems like maybe they're not going to be able to keep up that pace. The Saints are allowing just 9.4 yards per completions. They're also taking away the big plays on defense. That's the sixth lowest. But it's interesting, they're 21st in opponent EPA on dropbacks, despite the sacks and despite that. And the reason is they've allowed 6 first downs by penalty, and opponents have converted 56% of the time on third down passes, which is the second highest in the league thus far. So first and second down, they've been very good defensively. Third down, they have not been able to get off the field thus far, which is less predictive, but helps explain why the advanced stats are not quite as good as the conventional ones.
When it's the Saints, it might be more predictive, or at
That's
least
fair.
equally predictive. It might be
And
something
also,
that, like, the first and second down might regress a little bit as well.
they did face Mac Jones last week.
Yeah.
So
And
there's that
honestly, like,
element as well.
Spencer Rattler is at 21 in RBSDM and the CPOE plus EPA composite. I'm like, that's pretty good for Spencer Rattler right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
To be in the territory with, like, Bo Nix, Dak Prescott, Kyler Murray, like, he's outplaying some pretty good quarterbacks. So Kellen Moore's getting the most out of Spencer Rattler. Obviously, he just doesn't have the talent right now, but like I'm sad to see Kellen Moore be the head coach of the New Orleans Saints.
I mean, look, there's going to be a long view here. I guess the other thing we probably should have said from a big
No,
picture standpoint.
not from his perspective. I
Oh,
think
you
Spen
wanted Kellen Moore to be the head coach of the Seahawks?
I think Kellen Moore, I mean, even these two games, they're probably gonna have a bad season, but like Kellen Moore knows what he's doing on offense. And it seems like he is running a perfectly respectable team so far.
Thank
Right?
you. I would agree. Yeah.
So, I
Quite
mean, we looked at
respectability.
QBR for Spencer Rattler. It should not be, he should not be as good as Bo Nix so far in the season. But it's impressive what Kellen Moore has done. And I think it's the right strategy that he has. You know, like they're trying to win games, but they're trying to win games by not making big mistakes.
Yeah, I
It's just the
mean,
type of thing where they're heading to Seattle, and again, Mike McDonald's pretty set up for this type of situation. The Seahawks defense is. They're not going to win this game, you know, like, but I think the Saints are set up
they could win this
to
game.
keep it.
They're 7.5 point underdogs. FPI gives the Seahawks a 63% chance of winning.
This is also the type of game that, as the season goes on, the Saints may show themselves a little bit more. And it's been 2 weeks, small sample size, obviously, but I think the Seahawks are a little bit better. Where do you say they're on DVOA? Seventh now? That's probably about right. That feels good. I'm curious to see what the offense looks like. To me, that is the most important thing. I'm not as nervous about like big plays against Rick Woolen or something, even with Julian Love and potentially Devin Witherspoon being out again. Like I just can't really imagine a world where Spencer Rattler or Alvin Kamara run all over them.
I don't know.
So
I mean, it's only year two of the Mike McDonald scheme. I don't know. Who was their worst home loss last year?
the Giants was the worst home loss by far, but that was, I
Yeah.
think that was Ernest Jones's first game, I want to say.
I suppose. It was still, look, Daniel Jones might just be an amazing quarterback. Went for $62 in our league.
$62?
I believe that was the case. I don't know.
Who bid
Don't
that?
quote me on that.
Hold on.
I mean, he's been quite effective thus far. He's had
I.
2 20-plus games. But if he keeps playing like this, he is going to turn around a season without question. So I guess what I'm saying is I do think Daniel Jones is a level better of quarterback than Spencer Rattler, but
Oh, Daniel Jones is a level way better of quarterback than Spencer Rattler. Dimes, like, it's not even, I mean, Dimes, he has won a playoff game. Spencer Rattler's not going to win a playoff game.
in the context of last year's New York Giants offense, he undoubtedly finished worse than Spencer Rattler is right now in advanced
Look
stats.
at Mateo out there making claims. I didn't even do this with him. He's going out there and getting his boy Kenny Gainwell, despite the fact that he left the Eagles.
Mean, look, he's not 7 anymore. He doesn't need you holding his hand.
I like it. But I think the thing that is most important for me is basically we've seen 2 weeks of Seahawks offense. We saw 1 week that looked worse than we wanted. We saw 1 week that looked about what we wanted it to look like.
I mean, it looked like what we wanted it to look like. I mean, obviously there were the big turnovers. I don't know that I'm expecting 290 yards from Sam Darnold.
I'm not talking outcome wise. I'm talking process wise.
Yeah, no,
offense they run. I'm not saying like Ken Walker's probably not going to run for 100 yards on 8 carries or whatever it was, 10 carries. But like that is probably not going to happen again. If it's Helani or if it's Sharp, they're going to be better than they were, right? It was a bad game for Sharp last week. The offensive line is going to look better in this game. So, but process wise, does this look like the same offense? And if it does, I think the Seahawks can put up a lot of points in it. This could be the type of game that we look at where we're like, that's when things started clicking into place.
Yep.
It would also be nice to win a home game.
I agree. Last year, Spencer Rattler finished 39th of 40 qualifying quarterbacks in EPA plus CPOA composite.
Geno Smith territory, am I right?
ahead of Anthony Richardson with an identical score.
Sitting a cool 27th EPA plus CPOE. It's early.
It's very early.
Things will change, but that looks for the video podcast.
All right. Well, I don't know when we're pivoting to video, but
there are a lot of teams who won. The Raiders, they won the offseason. You know what I mean?
We are pivoting to, you know what I've always said? Look, and the season may go very well for the Raiders, but Pete Carroll is most fun to have as your coach between February 15th and September and Labor Day, whatever that time period is.
What about drafting a running back with a top 10 pick was fun
okay.
to
I
you?
Mean,
which part of that was fun?
It probably seemed fun to Raiders fans.
that's an insult to Raiders fans.
I mean, I think Seahawks fans would have talked themselves into a top 10 running back, a lot of them.
Look, we understand what fans are like, but
also at the time you were probably thinking, oh, Ashton Jeanty is going to be a generational running back along the lines of you're going to talk
Thomas Rawls, Chris Carson,
what we saw from Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry last season. This far, Ashton Jeanty has
2.7 yards per carry.
Yeah, not great. Probably
but don't look at his pass blocking. I think Pete had a lot to talk about on Tell the Truth Monday.
Well, it got to be on Tuesday this week.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Tell the Truth Tuesday. We'll see. Who knows? GG may be good eventually, but I'm like,
we would be losing our minds about it if we were Raiders.
Oh, my God. Losing our minds about it? We would have lost our minds about it back in April, though. Like, they didn't just draft a guard. I was mad that the Seahawks drafted a guard in the first round. They drafted a running back with a 6th fucking pick in the draft.
They sure did.
So, it has been the full Pete Carroll experience so far. He'll probably get them to the level of respectability, but like I don't know. There was something about it. Again, I don't want to cheer against Pete Carroll. This is not even a personal thing. It's more just like it would have been very annoying as a Seahawks fan, if Pete Carroll just went to Vegas and was really good. Because I like, between Team Pete and Pete John, and Team John, I'm Team Neither. You know? Just Team Clear House is the team that it should have been. But right now, this last offseason, you know, like, I was there believing in Sam Darnold as, again, process-wise. And it seems like it's paying off, both on the field and, you know, cap-wise and pretty much every other capacity. So, feeling very good in this moment. And again, I want to see the Seahawks offense again, because I think that's the fun piece, is we just haven't seen them that much, and we haven't seen what Clint Kubiak can do. And if they do
Clint
have
Kubiak revenge game.
Yeah. Revenge for, was he fired or did he just leave?
I mean, he was fired. I'm sure
the whole house was like clean house basically. But
you're not going to, you're not going to hire Kellen Moore and not give him a chance to hire a
Nussmeier. You're not going to hire Kellen Moore and not give him a chance to tank an entire season to draft his offensive coordinator's son that year.
Percentage chances of victory.
I'm going full 85%.
I don't think there's any NFL game that should be 85%. I'm saying 70% in this one.
Again, I'm And this will be a little
Maybe the
bit
game
of.
where the Broncos, their quarterback room all was out due to COVID exposure. That was probably an 85% chance
Oh
of
my
victory for
God.
the
I
other
want to remember
team.
the dude's name so badly. Like, oh, fuck. Kendall's.
That sounds right.
I think he was a quarterback at UCF.
Drew Locke was like, was he patient zero in this? Or he was definitely involved in that situation.
Kendall Hinton. There we go.
Yeah, that's pretty good. You got there.
He played quarterback at Wake Forest. Same thing. But shouts to Jake Dickert.
Yeah, Drew Locke was at the center of that. So
He was.
it
He
was
was
a
patient zero.
he was at the violation of the COVID protocols that resulted in all four of the team's quarterbacks being ruled out. So
That's really funny.
it was a long time ago, 5 years.
But I do think this game is a little bit of like the Seahawks need to outgain the Saints by a significant amount. If they win this game in the same way, I guess I didn't look at total yardage of the Niners Saints. I will feel bad if they don't well outgain the Saints in this game. Points or whatever, like I can understand that. Let me see what the final box score was of this one. Stats. Yeah, I mean, the Niners outgained the Saints. It wasn't that significant. 5.1 yards per play to 4.6. And it was Mac Jones. So I'm like, but I think the Seahawks, if they don't pretty significantly outgain the Saints and win, I will look at that as kind of a failure of this particular game. It's the easiest one on the schedule.
That's probably true.
And they have to win. And they have to go win a fucking home game and play well at home. There'll be a few Saints fans, but it's like, this isn't the same as the Niners.
No, on no level is the same as I would say. Did I say 70% chance of victory? Yeah, I guess I did. All right. On that note,
Thanks for listening. Wait, are we not doing cookies?
well, we gotta wait for Katie.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll talk about that in a second. The lengths Katie will go to not be on this podcast. To me, that's too far.
I don't know if I'm gonna put that in.
Really? You worried about Katie slander? At least keep that part.
You can never be too careful these days.
I guess so. Luca was homesick that day. And I'm literally driving around all throughout South Seattle just picking up cookies.
As one does.
And
You
then
didn't go all the way to Ravenna.
eating those cookies. No, but I'm there like yes, you traveled far for cookies, but for me, I'm like get my child homesick from school, and then I'm just
He was so
driving
sick
around
that
getting.
he
He
had to
was
play catch
fine.
with you.
He was fine. He missed baseball practice. I felt like he should have gone. But like I was like, do you think this is what I do every single day?
It wasn't exactly take your child to work day.
And I was like, if you think that's because it's true.
Wow.
And then I made him come in to look at the cookies that he couldn't have.
Oh, that's pretty mean, yeah.
I was curious if they were going to have any nut cookies
Treat.
at Treat, but they had tons of nut cookies. It was like, oops, all nut cookies at Treat. They had some good looking cookies though. I'm like kind of mad that I didn't have more, but yeah, not only did I just like drive around going and picking up cookies, I then ate so many fucking cookies. Just like I'm like the car swerving back and forth, and I'm just there eating repeated cookies. Gotta eat them when they're fresh.
Please don't drive recklessly in pursuit of Seattle's best cookie. The Felton cast cannot condone that.
Oh my God, Katie had another story about eating something in the car too. Oh, I was telling her about we have to have her on. It was like every time Katie's
Or
on, which she's
maybe just
never.
you talk about Katie's stories while she's not on.
She wasn't like, she didn't even think this was that interesting of a story, but she went to St. Bread and she said there's a bagel place right next to St. Bread. What is that? Do you know?
I do not know about this.
Let me look this up. Which, first off, why would there be a bagel place next to a bread place? But she was asking me who had won so far. And I was like, wait, Ben's Bread won, right?
Correct.
I described the gochujang, gochujoodle, sorry, as divisive.
I think that's a fair assessment
Does
of
that
the
seem
Goju
fair?
Doodle.
I think it's pretty good, but I get
I
it.
don't. I don't see anything about a bagel location right next to Saint Bread.
Yeah, I don't know. Katie might have made that up. And she was like, she was sitting outside of St. Bread. I'm going to get the Google Street View here. It probably wasn't Jensen Motorboat Company.
I mean, maybe it was some sort of a pop-up. I don't know. I can't speak to that.
And Katie was like, the bees were so bad in this. I feel like she must have been some. Is there like a place to eat? I've never been to St. Brad. Only you've been there.
There is a spot to eat outside, yes.
A little place to eat. Okay. So the bees were so bad in the spot to eat that Katie had to get in her car and eat her bagel with way too many locks inside of it. This is Katie's story. This is her lasting impression of St. Brad. And I was like, every time you're on the podcast, you're eating like food randomly in the car. And she was like, what are you talking about? Which she didn't remember. Because you remember when she got tats and she was like, you had a
Yes.
Pepsi that she had?
Yes.
I think she won the MVP just from this story.
Oh, not just from this story, but it definitely didn't hurt.
Mild insulting of us, and then that.
Exactly.
And that won her the MVP. And I'm like,
That's the formula.
all right, fine. Is
Sometime I
there.
would like to go to St. Bread and eat something besides their cookies. I still have not done that.
I want bread for sure.
A savory focaccia should be good. I'm into it.
Did you look at the Coachella lineup?
I mean, I glanced at it, I suppose. I wasn't really like thinking about it.
You don't have any perspectives on it?
Do you have perspectives on it?
I mean, kind of, yeah. I have
Okay, go
perspectives on
for it.
everything. Anything that I'm asked to have a perspective on, I can have a perspective on. And then if you ask me to have the
I
opposite
don't.
perspective, I can also have that
Well,
perspective.
you're not all takes Tristan for nothing here.
I just had seen somebody post like
Oh,
about.
disclosure intern style right next to each other. Love it.
Do you love that?
Yeah.
Which part? You like turnstile now?
I love the combination.
Was gonna say that shit is dead.
Oh, is it?
No, if you like it.
Oh, okay, yeah. Leaky lead relegated to the fourth line. That's or third line here. To sign how washed I am.
I mean, Samia was like basically like the last billed artist on the entire festival, which I was kind of shocked by. Shouts to Hocus Pocus for the season, of course. But you have no idea what I'm talking about. It's okay.
It's okay to not know things.
Her mom is Kathy Najimy, who
Oh,
is
you have told me that story before,
in the
yes.
movie Hocus Pocus as a witch. And
Yes.
it's almost October, and people
So
watch
it's
Hollywood.
spooky season.
Yeah. And her dad is the Dan Band.
Right, yes, of course.
Anyway, I saw somebody complaining about the lineup, and I was like, I who is like, I guess a millennial or whatever, and they were mad about it. And I was just like, I literally cannot figure out what you're upset about. And aside from just everybody's mad about everything, but I'm like, first off, this is like not for you, you know, like music festivals are for children. But also, I was like, this is like as millennial as Coachella can get,
I would
I
agree.
think, or would get. I looked at it and I was like, first off, I think Sabrina Carpenter and Justin Bieber are like having talk. I talk and pay attention to and think about festival headliners so fucking much. Like Justin Bieber is like an all-time get for a music festival at this point. Like doesn't play many shows, and most really, really big artists don't want to play music festivals. But like the impact of like Justin Bieber to me is way bigger than say like Tyler the Creator, who plays like pretty often, you know? Justin Bieber hasn't played in a long time. So I was like, damn, I saw that. And then Sabrina Carpenter is like in this moment, probably the current biggest pop star. So
Well, save it for the year in review podcast.
she's like number one in pop star rankings. But then I was like, the like indie rock, like things that could tangentially be considered like indie rock, especially classic indie rock. And I'm like, the Strokes and Interpol are on the like that line right there, the Strokes, David Byrne, Interpol, Alex G. I'm like, literally, what could you complain about this? You know, like maybe you'd have, like, you can always find better bands. And then, like, Coachella, more than almost any big music festival, is better at heavy music because they still like they have heavy music past and try to do it. But it was like Black Flag was kind of shocking to me to see like how low they were billed. But it was like
Oh, yeah, I didn't even see them.
Turnstile, I guess I'll count Devo. Wait, there's a lot more. Geese, sort of. Ceremony. But yeah, and then the last day, it's like Iggy Pop, Wet Leg, The Rapture, Black Flag, Suicidal Tendencies, The Chats,
the Cowbell featuring The Rapture.
Lamborghini
I haven't
Girls,
heard that
Ekka
song in a long
Vandal.
time.
Like, I was like, there's like these bits. There's like way more heavy music on this festival. And then like indie rock, like 2000s indie rock. Like The Strokes and David Byrne and Interpol are not selling tickets to this festival. You know, like Justin
There is fan
Bieber.
service.
Yeah, Justin Bieber is selling tickets to this festival. Like the amount that if you could like do it percentage wise of how many people are there for any individual artist, like everybody who's not the very, very top is a small percentage. And I was like, maybe if you were into hip hop, you could be like, this is pretty, pretty light on hip hop. But
Yeah, I'm
even
probably not getting
then,
the 3 day pass.
if you care about hip hop, I mean, I don't
Probably
just
I'm probably going on the Sundays.
It's sort of like broken down where it's sort of like Friday, I guess you'd say, is like the pop and electronic day, sort of. I mean, oh, Hot Mulligan too, as far as like heavy bands and Fleshwater, like, and Wednesday. I missed all this, but like, I thought it was like kind of like the best possible music festival lineup when you consider that they also need to sell tickets to this music festival.
I don't know anything about them, but the Bob Baker Marionettes. I'm
It's a
intrigued.
marionette theater
Oh,
in LA.
it's a legitimate marionette. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, the Bob Baker Marionette Theater. It's where like all the cool shows happen.
Oh.
Everybody wants to do stuff with the marionettes. So anyway, I was like, there's kind of like, I was impressed
Have you
overall.
considered trying to put together a Coachella lineup poster of members of the Seattle Mariners historically?
And Cal Raleigh's above Ken Griffey Jr. because Ken Griffey Jr. sucks now.
No, that's not the point. It's just gonna be random guys. So it looks like this poster, and it's just
Is that a
like,
thing you've seen?
no, I'm just envisioning it. Unieski Betancourt.
Joyce Manor. Yeah, I don't know. I'm like, I felt like it kind of like nailed a lot of the stuff. There's like 2000s indie rock. There's like current pop music. There's heavy music. There's Latin music. There's hip hop. Or it's like, yeah, it's like lighter on hip hop, but I guess it's kind of like just a few artists of almost everything. And then like people are just going to buy tickets for Justin Bieber and Sabrina Carpenter.
Well, I'm glad someone's here to defend Coachella.
I don't know. It was like one of those. I was just curious what your thoughts were on it.
Yeah, no, seems good.
There we go. Seems good. And I've got another scene report from the youth.
What's that?
Who do you think is the most important band, the most likely t-shirt to be seen from young people currently?
So an actual band?
I mean, I'll say artist. It is a band, though. It is an actual band. I will say this is the most important artist to young people. The shirt that I see the most. Maybe I'm going to exclude Morgan Wallen.
I don't even have a guess that would be anything but embarrassing to me.
I'm kind of fascinated what your embarrassing guesses are.
I don't know. I mean, but like, it would be like someone that they don't actually know, but they're just wearing the shirt because that's a thing, right?
I will tell you, a lot of people wear the shirt. But also, we were at Pedritsky Park today, and there were some high schoolers playing football, just being cool guys. You know what I mean? Shirtless playing football. I was like, look at these guys being guys.
Like dudes being guys, guys being
yeah,
dudes.
They were listening to this artist very loud.
And it's a band.
It is a band. I'm not saying they're current.
I understand that. I'm not thinking current. That's where I'm wondering whether it's going to be too embarrassingly old. Springsteen.
I wish it were Springsteen.
That's
If there were
true.
Guys being dudes and dudes being guys listening to Springsteen, that would be awesome. But no,
you
that
would
is
have
not
gone
even
over
close.
It and been, how do you do, fellow kids?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I don't know.
The most important band to young people, this might come as a shock to some or many, is the band Sublime. I'm not even joking.
Yeah, I guess
it is
so, I
like
guess so.
Walking around the neighborhood, being at the fair, which was a bleak place to be in light of times, but like Sublime. And I was kind of wondering, I was like, did Sublime just, I don't think there's like a TikTok hit. I don't think anything happened. And I was like, did they merchandise and then people
There
felt
wasn't a
like they
Kate Bush
had,
moment.
no, not even close. I don't think there's like a sync or anything, but I was like, did they merchandise really well? And then people were like, fuck, I've got this dope shirt. I've got to go listen to this band. I don't know. I will tell you that the branding is phenomenal, and that's usually what is an important lasting thing.
That is pretty good branding.
But like, there's not one shirt. You know, like Nirvana, it's the one shirt, right? Like that you see with the like smiley face. This is all over the place. And it is crazy. And yeah, there are kids listening to Sublime just like across the board, 40 Ounces to Freedom, self-titled. But it's crazy because in the car, in the CD player, we've had self-titled Sublime. So my children all fucking love Sublime. We thought we were listening to like the closest that we could get to of accessible skater music, basically. And I was like, I don't, we were not influenced by this trend. I'm not saying I'm like cool or whatever, because it's not very not cool, but like the, it's cool for 13-year-olds. But like, it is shocking to me how huge they're like the Led Zeppelin of current times,
Wow.
and that it was that band. I think it's partially, it's a very small catalog to dive into.
Okay.
It's like genreless in a lot of ways. It's still like aggressive, and I think aggressive music is what lasts the longest. And it's not so much to dive. You know, if you're like Springsteen, you're like, fuck, there's like 20 albums to even consider here. And I think we're at the exact perfect like time away from Sublime. So yeah, I was kind of, I've been kind of shocked to see it, but I see a lot of Morgan Wallen.